you're listening to the Whiskey Investment Podcast, the brand new show bringing you all the latest news, insights, panels, and interviews on the world of whiskey investments. Dig deeper into the highest return asset class of the past decade and look beyond the numbers. The Whiskey Investment Podcast is brought to you by VCL Vintners, the UK's leading whiskey cask merchant. Find more online at vclvintners.london.
Hello and welcome to this month's podcast brought to you by VCL Vintners, the London-based whiskey cask merchant which approaches the market from a financial perspective to maximise returns for clients. I'm Alwyn Gwilt, whiskey journalist and brand ambassador. The past 2 years have thrown out continuous challenges to the Scotch whisky industry, from the impacts of new trading regulations due to Brexit, to a complete decline in tourism due to COVID, along with supply chain difficulties, packaging delays, and increasing costs. But as we move into 2022, are things beginning to look brighter? It certainly looks to be the case. In 2021, the value of whisky exports surged by 19% year-on-year to £4.51 billion, according to the Scotch Whisky Association. And while these figures don't match those pre-pandemic, they are on their way to being in a healthier state. And as tourists return with borders opening up post-COVID, there is renewed hope that distilleries will soon be filled to the brim with eager visitors once more. In this month's podcast, we sit down with John Laurie, Managing Director of the Glenturret Distillery in Crieff. The distillery, long known for its association with the famous Grouse and host of the Famous Grouse Experience, shifted its focus when it was purchased by Lalique, the famous French crystal glassmaker. Today, the distillery is leaning into its heritage as one of Scotland's oldest distillery sites, bringing greater attention to its small batch releases of single malt and making waves with its on-site restaurant, which recently won a coveted Michelin star. In our discussion, John gives greater insight into the challenges faced by the small-sized distillery when dealing with Brexit, COVID, US tariffs, and the decline in tourism, and provides a positive outlook for the future. John, welcome to the podcast. Can you tell me a little bit more about your role at the Glenturret and, of course, the distillery itself?
Yeah, sure. Listen, thanks for having me. So my name is John Laurie. I am the Managing Director at the Glenturret, Scotland's oldest working distillery. We've been around since 1763. We're based in Crieff, which is just central of Scotland. It's about an hour and 10 minutes north of Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Brilliant. And how long have you actually been at the distillery and working with the Glenturret for?
So I have been at that distillery for 5 years now. And that was just a year prior to the recent acquisition. So the Glenturret in 2019, acquisition started the year prior. And we pitched to lots of different types of potential buyers. But in 2019, we signed the contract with Lalique, the luxury French crystal company, to take over the Glenturret. So I have been there, whether it was in the hands of Edrington, I oversaw the transition into the new co, and had a decision to make to stay with Edrington or move to the new co. And Silvio Dens, the owner of Lalique, sat me down and explained what their plans were for the site. And I thought, you can't say no to that. I've got to be part of that journey. So I've been there ever since.
Fantastic. And how has that transition been? So obviously you saw it a little bit before that changeover. And then you've obviously been picking up for those last few years. So you've really seen it kind of before and after that acquisition from Lalique. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the changes that have happened over that time period and where that kind of focus shifted for the Glenturret?
Such a big question, to be honest, because there's so much has changed since we were where we were before. And where we were before was the Famous Grouse experience. So Famous Grouse is one of Scotland's most powerful whisky brands. I love the Famous Grouse. I love the adverts. I think they're so iconically Scottish. The Glenturret was chosen in 2002 to be the spiritual home of the Famous Grouse. We were only a small part of the constituent blend, Famous Grouse, and 50% of what we made went into that blend. But because we were geographically closest to Matthew Gloag's home of Perth, it was decided that this distillery would become a spiritual home. So actually, in recent years, you know, since whisky has become super popular, no one's heard of Glenturret because we were the Famous Grouse experience. Going forward then, that culture, that mindset on site was really tourism focused. Tourism was the main reason for our existence and being a brand advocacy home for the Famous Grouse blend. That created a culture on site of really focusing on that guest experience. So when we were purchased by the Lalique Group in 2019. We had to not only transition from degrousing and taking all the grouse off the walls and out the car park and bringing the Glen Turret brand back to life, which was a really proud moment for the local community, but also transitioning the business into a proper standalone distiller that was a contributing part of the single malt industry, which was a really important journey for us. We are really proud of the Glen Turret, and therefore it wasn't just about putting the brand out there and selling some bottles. We wanted to re-establish this distillery as a functional part of this industry that we're also proud to be part of.
Fantastic and amazing tradition. Yeah, the last time I was there was definitely pre that changeover. I think it would have been 9 or 10 years ago. And I definitely remember the giant grouse statue greeting me on my entrance. So obviously a lot of changes since that time, but also, as you say, a very exciting and very proud time for the distillery to reestablish itself in that space. So it's obviously been a very exciting time over these last few years with Elite coming on board. At the same time, it's been a very challenging couple of years with both COVID and Brexit. How are you coping at this stage as those two things start to maybe not change or ease? They're still very much present in our day-to-day lives, but how are you managing with those?
Yeah, do you know what? Fine now. If you were to ask me that question, even 6 months ago, you would have got a very different answer. I keep saying to take a distillery like Glen Turret out of a large corporate and set up as a standalone business would have taken 2 years to do well. To rebrand, relaunch and enter new markets for the Glen Turret would have taken 2 years to do well. To open up a fine dining restaurant, the first of its kind in the Scottish whisky industry, would have taken 2 years. To do all of those things in the same 2 years with COVID and Brexit in the middle had its challenges. It did present its challenges. Coming at the back of that, I think we were much stronger for it, a newfound resilience in the business that we wouldn't have had if we hadn't all shared that experience together.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely a shared experience there, as you say, across the whole Scotch whisky industry and you know, an industry which is so reliant on tourism as well, which hopefully we will see bouncing back this next year as we as borders open up again. Just going back a little bit to Brexit, we're just over a year on from the regulation changes due to Brexit. Can you tell me a bit about some of the ups and downs of this past 15 months and the impact on the distillery's exports? Because I know with the relaunch, you were really focusing more on European and, of course, global markets as well, but certainly European markets. So can you tell us a little bit more about the impact of that?
Yeah, exactly. Without realising the impact of Brexit, because we didn't actually, no one understood the impact of Brexit because the rules changed right at the last minute. I mean, Brexit was being negotiated in the December before the rules changed in January. So it was impossible for businesses to plan for what was about to come. We had decided to launch the new Glen Turret, the new products, the new designs in Europe, because at that time, my thought process was it's geographically closer for me, so I'll be able to be in territory much more often. It'll be easier for me to meet with the distributors and deal with whatever comes up from the new brand launch. As it happened, I couldn't travel at all because of COVID. I had to set the distributors up over Zoom. And then Brexit meant that the best analogy I've got is I actually got a pallet of whiskey to Japan quicker than I could get it into France. The groupage, which is where you put multiple pallets onto the same container, so different distilleries can all send a pallet of whiskey and we get together and we put it on one container and send it across. That business model is really important to smaller distributors, smaller distilleries. And that was the part of export that was hit the hardest because that truck driver would have multiple different export documents from different distilleries for everything that was in the back. And that was really complicated to get through. So they were the slowest to go through customs. You also saw in the news all the delays at Dover and these being more complicated. Would just get pushed off. Bigger organisations, not distilleries, but bigger organisations would pay more to get onto the ferry. And therefore, it really stagnated our European shipments. We had to get creative. Germany, for example, was really receptive and worked really well with Britain on getting goods in. So we shipped to Germany and then got our German distributors to ship to France and Netherlands for us. Netherlands would turn our goods away because we'd said that there were goods of Scotland. It was a crucial stage for Glen Turret. We had just launched. We had just had this new message to tell. So not having product on shelf would have been terminal for us, really. We had to get that product out. So A lot of the problems with Brexit were also paperwork based. In Netherlands, for example, we could get goods in as long as we said United Kingdom, not UK, not Scotland, not Britain. Had to be very specific. And many markets were the same. So we had to learn all of these new markets that were part of the EU bloc were now individual territories for us. So if you think of, you know, Catriona is our export manager, our supply chain manager. So she had gone from, say, 10 markets to 20 markets because she was used to EU being one market. So that if you imagine the admin involved in that, your admin doubles overnight. So there a lot of the delays were due to that admin backlog for learning the every country's quirks. And I spoke to the Italian embassy and they admitted it was basically whoever was on shift that day depended on whether your goods were allowed in or whether they got sent back because it was their interpretation of this new law. It's not their fault, but everyone reads a law and you don't have much time to prepare for it. Then all that happens is that every individual customs officer interprets it the way they think that it should be upheld. So yeah, it was an incredibly difficult period, which I'm really delighted to say has calmed down now.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I mean, that was obviously a massively steep learning curve for yourselves and for everyone at the distillery. Do you think it was more challenging because you are a fairly small team at the Glenturret? So in regards to that admin burden?
Definitely. And I think that's the fairest to be said of all small distilleries. But in particular for Glenturret, we had just came out of Edrington where we had departments for departments. We had export departments, packaging departments, bottling departments. And when we came out, we didn't have any of those departments anymore. So the business as an organization, we had skills gaps that we had to then fill. Supply chain was one of those skills gaps. We had recruited a supply chain manager to help us with our exports. And that person had just started 5 months prior to Brexit. So it was a real baptism of fire for Catriona to come in, set up all the systems that a small business needs to export and then handle and navigate Brexit at the same time.
Keeping that in mind, obviously, with all of the challenges that presented themselves with Europe, did you find yourself looking to any other export markets, perhaps more openly, instead of shipping to Europe? So any other global markets that ended up opening up for you because of these challenges that were happening much closer to home?
Yes, indeed. As I said, we found we got a pallet to Japan quicker than we got a pallet to France. So we actually, that allowed us to start looking at other markets that we had originally planned to launch later in the brand plan. Given that they were much easier for us to ship products to, we decided to move them forward. So Japan was actually a year ahead of where we expected to launch it, but were very, very receptive to bringing goods in. Japan's a great mature market for Scotch anyway, so that was great. We were able to train their distributors on Zoom. It did change some of our opinions. It did change some of our decisions as to where to launch and when to launch, and not even just where to launch, but how much stock to allocate to that territory. If we were taking 6 months to get products into some countries in Europe, then they were not going to have the full year to sell through that stock. So we had to then reallocate that stock to other territories. So Japan was one. New Zealand was another. New Zealand still moved quite well. Australia. Canada was excellent, actually. We had great success in British Columbia in particular. So yeah, we did look to other territories that we could continue trading with until such things calmed down in Brexit.
Wow. So just a continuously moving jigsaw puzzle, of, as you say, reallocations and changing plans. And so you were really having to think fairly quickly on your feet.
Yeah, we were meeting as a leadership team at the distillery. We were meeting daily. And if it wasn't on about how to handle tourism return from COVID or team on furlough or markets that we could export to, markets that we couldn't export to, stock that we'd sent to Italy three times and been rejected three times, or Netherlands rejecting on different paperwork and France requiring different labelling. Every single meeting had a different challenge. I mean, looking back on it positively, it did build a huge resilience within the business. We are much better educated on export than we perhaps would have been because export was really quite established for single malt. There were lots of different options, lots of different carriers that would take your product. Being faced with this challenge has allowed us to really educate ourselves and get much better at understanding how to navigate that. And if any kind of circumstance around that came again, we'd be so much better prepared to handle it.
That's an excellent way to look at it. And I hope more or a lot of the industry gets that opportunity to reflect and find something positive, because obviously sometimes it can be easy to to drown in the challenges, but great for yourself and the team that you were able to see the upside of all of this. Other upsides, obviously, with the US. I was curious, I don't know how much of your export market is focused on the US, but were you impacted by the tariffs initially? And obviously now those have eased. Are you looking at sending more stateside?
We were negotiating with the US when the trade tariffs were at their peak. And that was difficult because those trade tariffs were then included in the price negotiation with our distributors in the US, which was a really difficult margin for us to make work. America is already a very difficult market to work with. So the introduction of 25% was really difficult. What worked well for us is that those tariffs happened to be lifted before we signed the contract, and therefore we were able to renegotiate the prices without the tariff in them. It delayed our launch in America, so it hasn't meant that we are now going back to more exports. Our unique circumstance was that we were negotiating with it, and because of the trade tariff, America was pushed back easily a year, if not a bit more, in our launch strategy because it was an unattractive market for us to launch into with the price margins being the way that they were. I'm delighted that they were lifted. I'm delighted that Europe have reciprocated and that we are building that relationship back up with the US. And to that point, the Glentoric stock landed in America last week. So I'm heading over across there at the end of this month to go and activate and train and meet with the distributors in person for the first time since Glentoric relaunched. Our brand ambassador is going to cross and train them. I'm delighted at that. It's worked out well for us in America, but it was a really difficult situation. And yeah, very grateful that our distributors were patient with us and understood that it wasn't a market that we wanted to move into when the tariffs were as the way they were. Because they were patient and they worked with us, we were able to get it to launch in a place that's much more attractive for us now.
Absolutely. And as you say, patience has been, I think, possibly the name of the game, hasn't it, over these last few years, whether that is the US, Brexit, or COVID. It's been a bit of a triple threat storm for the Scotch whisky industry, certainly the single malt Scotch whisky industry. So obviously some great positives in terms of the reflection of what has happened already. But with COVID rules finally easing in the UK, and obviously hopefully more overseas visitors coming back to see us in person, and as you say, more understanding of what those rules are with export to Europe, what are you most looking forward to in the coming months as we look into the rest of 2022 and what it might bring?
Tourism. Of all the things you've just mentioned there that we've had to endure for the last 2 years, that is the piece we've missed the most. I think it's been undervalued for so long. People who visit distilleries are not brand fans. They're not visiting Glenturret because they're a huge Glenturret fan. They're visiting it because they're in Scotland on holiday and want to visit a distillery, and we happen to be on the route to Oban or up to the North Coast 500, or they're staying at Gleneagles nearby. So actually what tourism means to us is recruitment. You have international visitors coming to Scotland who love what we do already, visiting a distillery, going through the distillery tour, falling in love with our process, falling in love with our product and the stories and the romance around our product, buying a bottle in the gift shop to take home with them. Those direct-to-consumer sales are incredibly meaningful to us as an industry. Those brand advocates that we send out into the world, you know, after they've fallen in love with the Glenturret on their tour and go home and tell their family and friends and give their gifts of their bottles, gives us international ambassadors all over the world from that visit. Really can't undervalue the impact of tourism to Scottish whisky, not just for brand advocacy, but also for direct consumer sales that mean an awful lot and create huge employment in rural locations in Scotland. All of our tour guides are from the town that we exist in. That is much more meaningful to the local economy than perhaps our marketing team are or our international sales team are. The tourism part of the business is much more meaningful. So really looking forward to seeing our international visitors come back to Scotland. I'm really looking forward to seeing Glenturret busy and hustling and bustling again. I think that's going to do wonders for us as a business, but mostly for just this sense of culture at the on site.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It just changes the entire, as you say, energy of a place, isn't it, when you've got people there. And of course, I can't not mention the incredible news you had with Michelin star awarding your Lalique restaurant a coveted star after only a year, which is a huge achievement for yourselves, but also for the Scotch whisky industry and the Scottish hospitality. How good did this feel after all of the challenges you faced in these past couple of years?
It's incredible. Really is a great honour. We set about opening the first fine dining restaurant in a Scottish whiskey distillery was our goal. We knew that we'd put the talent into the restaurant that could get to the Michelin star level. We knew that we'd invested in the infrastructure there that could do that, but we didn't want to be arrogant enough to say, you know, that's what we were going to do. We just do your best and hope that, you know, people recognise that you've done your best. Bringing Mark Donald was really important to us. He is a Scottish chef who's just at the perfect stage of his career. He is experienced enough that he has a world travel palate, but he's young enough to see the excitement in doing something that's never been done before. And that was important. We needed somebody who was really going to immerse themselves in the distillery. So he spent lots of time with the production workers. He worked in the distillery. He worked with the barley. He worked with all the raw ingredients. It was really important to us. The restaurant was a genuine gastronomic experience and not a brand restaurant, if that makes sense. We don't serve whiskey with each course. We don't put whiskey sauce on top of your chicken breast. It's not a Glenturret brand restaurant. It is a genuine gastronomic experience that celebrates the terroir of the local area. So we have sourdough breads that uses the malted barley that we use in the whiskey. Mark literally goes down with a scoop and takes it out of the chill when it arrives. We have sweet Sicily that grows locally at the back door. We have wild garlic growing at the back door, pine trees. We have honey from a local beehive. Therefore, we wanted to celebrate, as I said, the local terroir of Glenturret and that area. Actually, the mashing in temperatures that we use, Mark replicates them in cooking temperatures. So we really bring in the distillery into the food without putting any whiskey in the food. And what that, again, back to my tourism answer as well, is what that's done is it's attracted a consumer who is a gastronomic fan, who really loves flavours. And they're perfect for whiskey because you're already educated into how to unpack flavours, how to see the value in different flavour matchings. That consumer is already primed to really appreciate and understand single malt, which you can do in the bar afterwards. But the Michelin star is universally recognised at a certain level. We not only have Glenturret, but we celebrate all the category. So we have whiskies from all the distilleries in Scotland. Again, just to be a genuine bar, but also because we're really proud of the industry that we work in, we are doing something new for our industry, and therefore we want the whole industry to benefit.
It's amazing. It was so exciting when I saw that news come out, because as you say, whiskey and food are often paired together in terms of that flavor matching. But then actually, when you think about that consumer subset as people who just enjoy flavor, why wouldn't they enjoy whiskey if they enjoy a wide variety of food and a gastronomic experience? So it was fantastic news. And I'm very excited for what the future holds, not only for the restaurant, but for everything you're doing at the Glenturret as it shifts and moves into this next stage of its life cycle. So John, thank you so much for speaking to us today, giving us that great reflection on the things that you've been through, which no doubt will chime true for so many other distilleries out there, and also what our listeners will maybe not always be aware of all of the challenges that go on behind the scenes for a distillery. So thank you for joining us today. Your insights have been very, very valuable. And I just wish you the best of luck, as you say, as these overseas visitors return. And of course, with your upcoming trip over to the US as well.
Thanks so much. I'm really grateful for your time.
Thanks so much for joining us here at VCL Vintners for another whiskey podcast. Make sure to tune in next month when we'll be exploring more stories in the world of whiskey. I'm Alwyn Gwilt, wishing you an enjoyable and whiskey-filled month ahead.